Thank you for joining me for the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Leslie Hunt. Today we are going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Santan and Queen Creek, so if you're ready, let's get going. Our first article is entitled East Valley Institute of Technology, 9 School Districts Reach Funding Accord. This was posted in the Queen Creek Tribune, July 26, 2026, and updated July 27, 2026, written by Paul Mariniak. Some of the more than 2,500 high school juniors and seniors attending the East Valley Institute of Technology's Mesa campuses might be breathing easier today after it reached an agreement on funding with the 9 school districts that suit it. With school set to begin on Monday, July 27th, at EVIT's campuses, which students generally attend for half a day, 5 days a week, the 9 districts and EVIT issued separate announcements of the resolution of a bitter fight that has lasted for over a year. An issue was the failure of both sides to reach new intergovernmental agreements, IGAs, related to the amount of state money EVIT would pass to the districts for their own career and technical education programs at their high school campuses. EVIT not only wanted to cut that funding, but also demanded more control over the programs, the district said. The districts eventually went to court, where a Maricopa County Superior Court judge ruled that the money they received could be used for both their own satellite CTE programs and those approved by EVIT. The districts that filed suit included Tempe Union, Gilbert Public Schools, and the Unified Districts of Apache Junction, Cave Creek, Chandler, J.O. Combs, Fountain Hills, Higley, and Queen Creek. 3 other districts that belonged to EVIT, one of 14 CTE districts in the state, had reached new IGAs early last year. They included Mesa Public Schools, Scottsdale Unified, and American Leadership Academy. The ruling by Judge Christopher Corey in June left many unanswered questions that virtually put the parties back to where they started before the onset of negotiations last year. There were still no IGA for the new school year, and without one, EVIT said it could not provide any state funding. The ruling also left unresolved the issue of transportation for those district students who had been enrolled in EVIT's MESA programs, many of which seniors needed to complete before graduation. While EVIT offered to cover the district's transportation costs, put at over $4 million, the districts insisted that they had new IGAs. Transportation was never an issue in the lawsuit, so the judge could not be asked to resolve that dispute. The district said they would not allow on-school property vehicles belonging to a private contractor EVIT found to bus the students. There also was a question of whether at least some districts would even excuse students who found private transportation that would allow them to attend MESA classes without being considered absent. In a joint statement Saturday, the district said the new agreement with EVIT provides $5 million in new transportation funding this year, quote, and resolves the current issues around transportation funding and program transparency for all students, end quote. Quote, for years, the 9 districts were the only districts in the valley required to shoulder these transportation costs. That changes now, end quote, the statement said. It also indicated it would be getting 76% of pass-through funding from EVIT. They had said in their lawsuit that EVIT wanted to cut that. That money, the district said, can, quote, finally be used for what it was always intended for, satellite programming that serves students directly in their home districts. Some parents continued to express confusion and frustration on a Facebook site that parents created to find private transportation for their children to the Mesa campuses. Apparently, not all schools will have transportation to and from the EVIT campuses. EVIT's announcement Sunday morning of an agreement said, quote, vehicles will be available to transport approved students to and from EVIT's central campuses. It has been quite a process, and we appreciate your patience as we work through the many details to make this happen. We are continuing to finalize the pickup locations, end quote. EVIT Superintendent Dr. Chad Wilson said Sunday that the transportation solution won't start out perfectly because, quote, it is building the system from the ground up. Quote, we have not historically operated a transportation department, end quote, he said. Quote, we do not have an established fleet and we are entering an area where we have limited experience, end quote, he said. Quote, however, through the commitment of our staff and partners, we have developed a transportation system that will serve more than 1,000 students from 26 high schools. Quote, in creating this model, EVIT worked to replicate as closely as possible the transportation structure that existed previously, end quote, he added. Quote, historically, four-hour central campus programs were not provided transportation because their schedules did not align with the traditional high school bell schedule, end quote, Wilson said, adding it is not providing transportation for its morning four-hour programs, quote, and where seats are available can provide transportation to EVIT for afternoon four-hour programs, end quote. Wilson also said that the EVT board's decision to allocate $5 million for transportation showed its, quote, commitment to ensuring transportation does not become a barrier preventing students from accessing programs that provide industry certifications, college credit, and pathways to high-demand careers. In their statement, the districts asserted they had been trying, quote, to resolve this dispute through agreement rather than conflict. Over the past 18 months, the districts offered EVIT multiple opportunities to reach a resolution outside of litigation. Litigation became necessary only after those efforts did not produce the outcome students and taxpayers deserved, end quote, their statement said. They also said EVIT has agreed to honor all previously approved programs and will not close them mid-year. Quote, if a program is discontinued, the districts have the ability to continue offering it independently with the EVIT covering the associated costs, end quote, their statement said, adding, quote, the districts remain committed to the success of every student enrolled at EVIT's central campus. This agreement does not change that commitment. It strengthens the district's ability to invest directly in students across the East Valley while EVIT fulfills its own funding obligations, end quote. Stating they have been, quote, standing up for East Valley students and taxpayers throughout the process, end quote, the districts also said, quote, this outcome affirms what the nine districts have said from the start. Taxpayer dollars should be spent transparently, and district students deserve the same level of support as every other district in the Valley, end quote. Wilson said in his statement that, quote, this has been an incredibly challenging time for EVIT, but most importantly for our students, families, and communities we serve, end quote. He apologized to them saying, quote, disagreements between public institutions should never negatively impact the communities we serve, and unfortunately this disagreement created uncertainty for students and families, end quote. He added that the new one-year agreement, quote, does not resolve every issue, but does allow parties to continue working through remaining challenges while ensuring students maintain access to the programs they and their families have chosen, end quote. He also said the agreement preserves EVIT's resources to, quote, support continued program oversight, accountability, and improvement so students throughout our communities have access to high-quality career and technical education opportunities, end quote. Wilson added that while, quote, there is still work ahead, end quote, the agreement, quote, provides the opportunity to move forward, strengthen our programs, and focus on what matters most, our students, end of story. Our next article is entitled, Higley Board Member Resigns Midway Through Term. This was posted in the Queen Creek Tribune and written by Samantha Ray, posted on July 27, 2026, and updated July 28, 2026. Scott Glover abruptly resigned from Higley Unified School District Governing Board early last week, with approximately 2 years remaining in his four-year term. In a letter to Maricopa County Superintendent Shelley Boggs, Glover wrote that he was resigning his position on the board effective as of July 20th and that he was notifying district and county officials that same day with a signed copy of the letter. He did not provide a reason for his decision and did not respond to request for comment. Glover has served on the board for a collective 5.5 years. First elected in November 2016, he served a 4-year term before withdrawing from his run for re-election in 2020. In 2024, he returned to run for his current 4-year term. He has been a member of the East Valley community for 3 decades and has dedicated almost the same amount of time to public school teaching, working in neighboring Gilbert Public Schools for 25 years. He retired at the end of the 2024-25 school year. Board President Amanda Wade said she was notified of Glover's resignation July 20th via letter and said in a statement that she's deeply frustrated and saddened by his decision. Quote, "Public education needs folks who are willing to stand up and support it, and Scott was and is a huge public education advocate, and I wish him luck in whatever his next endeavor is," end quote, she wrote, adding, quote, "This letter came before the resignation was effective, as I received a phone call from the county later on Monday that the resignation was official. Our district policy is that the resigning board member is responsible for informing the board of their resignation along with informing the county and any other relevant parties, which Mr. Glover did on Monday," end quote. HUSD's governing board policy states, quote, "Any board member who desires to resign from the governing board shall send a letter of resignation to the governing board secretary, the superintendent, and the office of the county school, the superintendent, with a copy to the secretary of state, giving the effective date of the resignation. The resigning board member shall furnish a copy of such letter to each other member of the board and to the superintendent prior to the date on which the resignation is to become effective," end quote. Board member Sarah Jarman said she received the letter the afternoon of July 20th and that, quote, "I was shocked and surprised by Scott Glover's resignation," end quote. Board member Ann Van Hoek said she was not notified until approximately 5 p.m. on the day of Glover's resignation and that she did not receive a copy of the letter from Glover prior to his resignation taking effect. Quote, "Scott Glover's resignation came as a complete surprise for me," Van Hoek said in a statement. "I had no advance notice that he intended to resign, and I did not receive a copy of his resignation letter as required by Governing Board Policy BBBC," end quote. Board member Tiffany Schultz said, quote, "I didn't know about Scott Glover's resignation prior to it happening and was completely caught off guard. I have since found out that he may have never intended to carry out his full term, and for that I'm angry that the voters weren't aware of this when making their decision," end quote. Under Arizona Revised Statute 15-302, the Higley Governing Board has 30 days after notification of the vacancy to submit up to 3 names to the county school superintendent's office for consideration. The county superintendent is not required to appoint from that list and has legal authority to appoint any qualified individual to fill the vacancy. Or the county superintendent may call a special election to fill the vacancy. Whoever is appointed or elected would serve out the remainder of Glover's term through December 2028. Wade said the board is still finalizing a timeline for the process. "We are working to finalize a timeline as quickly as possible to allow community members to volunteer to replace Mr. Glover so that we, as a board, can send the names of our community members to the county superintendent's office for her to select our newest governing board member," she said. The specifics on that timeline are not quite finished, but will be as soon as we're able. 30 days is not very long, and with the start of the school year, these next 30 days are quite busy. We want to make sure we are doing the best we can with the timeline we are beholden to. Maricopa County Superintendent Shelley Boggs has determined that the vacancy will be filled by appointment. End of story. This story is made possible through grant funding from the Arizona Local News Foundation's Arizona Community Collaborative Fund. This was updated July 7th to include the MCSSO decision on how the vacancy will be filled. You are listening to the East Valley News for Queen Creek and Santan Valley. I am Leslie Hunt, your volunteer broadcaster. Carrying on, Our next article is entitled, There's No Room for Human Trafficking in Arizona, How the Hospitality Industry is Helping Prevent Exploitation While Supporting Survivors. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent, July 28th, 2026, and written by Kevin Carey. See something, say something. If someone appears to be in immediate danger, call 911. If you suspect human trafficking, contact Homeland Security Investigations at 1-866-373-2423 or the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888. You do not have to be certain exploitation is occurring to make a report. Trained professionals can assess the situation and determine the appropriate response. This is an opinion article. Every July 30th, World Day Against Trafficking in Persons, serves as a reminder that preventing human trafficking is a responsibility shared by every community. While law enforcement plays a critical role, lasting prevention also depends on businesses, organizations, and individuals working together to recognize the signs of exploitation, support survivors, and make communities safer. Across Arizona and the country, the hotel industry is working to ensure its properties are places of safety. Hotels are uniquely positioned to help recognize and prevent trafficking because hospitality employees interact with thousands of guests every day. Rather than waiting to respond after exploitation occurs, the industry has made prevention a priority by investing in employee education, strengthening reporting protocols, and partnering with law enforcement survivor advocates and nonprofit organizations. Front desk associates, housekeepers, maintenance staff, restaurant employees, security officers, suppliers, and managers all have opportunities to notice behaviors or situations that others may never see. Through specialized training, they learn how to recognize potential indicators of trafficking, respond in ways that prioritize safety, follow established reporting procedures, and avoid actions that could place survivors or themselves at greater risk. No single sign confirms trafficking, but understanding indicators such as coercion, fear, restricted movement, or unusual guest activity helps employees recognize when something may be wrong and notify the appropriate authorities. Since 2020, hospitality employees nationwide have completed more than 2.6 million anti-trafficking trainings, underscoring the hotel industry's commitment to guest and employee safety. The hospitality industry is also investing in survivors through workforce development partnerships and the American Hotel and Lodging Association Foundation's No Room for Trafficking Survivor Fund, which provides grants to community-based organizations focused on housing, economic stability, career development, and other resources that help survivors rebuild their lives while reducing the risk of revictimization. This work is making a difference, but preventing human trafficking cannot rest with one industry alone. Healthcare professionals, educators, transportation providers, businesses, community organizations, and residents all play an important role in recognizing exploitation, reporting concerns, and helping survivors find safety, support, and a path forward. Exploitation thrives on silence and isolation. Prevention depends on awareness, partnership, and people who are willing to act. Together, Arizona can continue building communities where traffickers have fewer places to hide and survivors have more opportunities to find help. Kevin Carey is president and CEO of the American Hotel and Lodging Association Foundation, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit that trains hospitality employees to recognize, report, and prevent human trafficking through its No Room for Trafficking initiative and provides survivor support through its No Room for Trafficking Survivor Fund. Please submit comments at yourvalleynet.com/letters or email them to azopinions@iniusa.org. We are committed to publishing a wide variety of reader opinions as long as they meet our civility guidelines. End of story. Our next article is entitled, Four QC Winners Increase Their Office Seniority. This was posted in the Queen Creek Tribune and written by Jim Ficus, Tribune contributor, dated July 26, 2026. Queen Creek Town Council will be adding to its stockpile of seniority as three incumbents easily kept their seats in the July 21st primary election. Don Oliphant, Travis Padilla, and Vice Mayor Brian McClure won by large enough margins in the five-person race that there will be no runoff in the November 3rd general election. Mayor Julia Wheatley ran unopposed for her second four-year term. Oliphant won her fifth four-year term, while McClure and Padilla gained second terms. When they are seated in January, four of the seven members will be serving at least their fifth four-year term. Wheatley was on the council for three terms before being first elected mayor in 2022. Assuming the mayor and six council member lineup stays intact until next round of municipal elections in 2028, they will have averaged 13.5 years in office. Queen Creek does not have term limits for the mayor and council. Some East Valley municipalities, notably Mesa and Chandler, limit their mayor and council members to 2 four-year terms. Oliphant, who was first elected in 2010, said during the campaign that the long-timers have led Queen Creek through a tale of two towns. I came into office in 2010 during the economic downturn, she said. We just tried to maintain. There wasn't a lot of growth. In the second or third term, it started to pick up, and by the fourth term, we've really gotten growth. It's been a difference of day and night. Queen Creek's population was 26,000 when Oliphant took office. It has grown to an estimated 91,900, climbing from the 1,352nd largest U.S. municipality to number 483. Hitting a magic number, the three victorious incumbents easily cleared the magic number threshold to avoid a runoff. In results filed by elections officials in late July 22, Oliphant was the top vote-getter with 6,102, followed by Padilla at 5,508 and McClure at 5,255. Challengers Nick Massey had 3,605 votes and Benjamin Harrison 3,017 votes. Using those July 22nd results, the formula to determine if a candidate has enough votes to win outright in the primary divides the total votes, 3,270, by the three seats up for election, which equals 10,090. That number is divided by 2, which equals 5,045. The lowest vote-getter of the incumbents cleared that hurdle by 200 votes. The Maricopa County Recorder said about 5,900 remained to be counted from across the county. While it could not say where those ballots came from, but it's unlikely many came from Queen Creek. Final unofficial results were expected by Monday, July 26, but they're not likely to upset the margins of victory for the Queen Creek victors by any significant degree. While there will be no town council runoff in the general election November 3rd, will be a big day for other elections of local significance. The four public school districts that serve Queen Creek, Higley, J.O. Combs, and Chandler, will be electing school board members that day. Signing off, one benefit of deciding the council race in the primary is that most of the campaign signs along Queen Creek roads will be coming down soon. Candidates whose contests have been decided in the primary must have their signs down by August 5th. Candidates whose congressional, state, and school board races will be decided in November 3rd general election may leave their signs up until November 18th. Winners' three goals. During the campaign, the Queen Creek Tribune asked the council candidates to state their top three goals if elected. Here's what the eventual winners said. Brian McClure, family-friendly, we need to provide the best quality of life for our residents. For families to thrive, we must continue to construct more roads, parks, and infrastructure for water. Public safety, supporting our brave first responders that keep our community safe, is a top priority. We will support our firefighters and police officers with the right training, equipment, and staff to keep Queen Creek residents safe. Strong economy. Creating a business-friendly environment is important to attracting good-paying jobs and small businesses. We must commit to keeping taxes low and ensuring the town government operates within its means. Don Oliphant. Continuing to accelerate traffic relief by supporting funding and permits needed to finish critical road connections, ensuring residents spend less time in traffic and more time at home. Ensuring long-term water security for the residents by voting to finalize the infrastructure for the Harquahala Water Project to guarantee a 100-year supply that protects our property values and future. Continuing to support our parks and trails master plan to ensure our town's outdoor heritage is preserved for the next generation. Travis Padilla, continue to create a safe and prosperous community for families to thrive, improve the roads and maintain fiscal responsibility with taxpayer money, ensure that our growth is managed and public safety is maintained. End of story. Our next article is entitled Teen Girl Missing in Queen Creek Found. This is courtesy of the Queen Creek Police Department and posted in the Queen Creek Independent. No author is listed. And this was posted July 28, 2026. A teen girl missing from Queen Creek since July 19th has been located. The Queen Creek Police Department reports that Ava Manos has been found and is safe. Five other teens remain missing. Devontae Renfro, 16, is black with black hair and brown eyes. He is 5'8" and weighs 130 pounds. He was last seen at about 3:35 p.m. on July 20th, wearing a gray t-shirt and tan pants or shorts. Jonah Warrington, 15, is Native American with black hair and brown eyes. He is 5'11" and weighs 140 pounds. He was last seen about 1 a.m. on July 19th wearing a gray t-shirt and maroon shorts or black pants. Antonio Nuno, 17, is white with brown hair and brown eyes. He is 5'7" and weighs 143 pounds. He was last seen at about 4:36 a.m. on June 25th wearing a black t-shirt and black shorts. Aiden Searcy, 16, is white with blonde hair and blue eyes. He is 5'9" and weighs 135 pounds. He was last seen around 9:58 p.m. on June 21st. He was wearing black framed glasses, a gray t-shirt, and maroon shorts. He has a scar on the left side of his chin and on his left forearm. Abriana Madrid, 14, is Native American with black hair and brown eyes. She is 4'10" tall and weighs 100 pounds. She was last seen on November 13th. She was wearing a gray shirt and black pants and had a cut on her finger. In an effort to ensure the safety of missing teens, QCPD no longer discloses the locations of where they were last seen. Anyone with information on the missing teens is asked to contact QCPD at 480-358-3500 or call 911 if it's an emergency. End of story. Thank you for listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, the East Valley News. Until next time, take care.